Hello? Are you ready to start, Victoria?
Yes, sir.
Great. Well, hey, this is Ira Green. Thanks, everybody, for attending Simmons Energy, a division of Piper Sandler's conference today. We're going to be talking about capital raising in the current energy equity capital markets environment, and more specifically, reviewing tools that companies should consider today and for the reemergence from the current energy downturn. Before I introduce the team, got to read you some legal ease here. I need to remind everybody that this call cannot be referenced in any articles, and this conversation should be considered off the record. So thank you. Got that out of the way. We've got a great speaker lineup today. We've got Dave Studinski, who is our global head of equity capital markets at Sandler. We've also got Neil Riley, who heads up our syndicate. We've got Steve Studnicki, who heads up convertibles, and then Mike Bassett in equity capital markets that focuses a lot on the ATM sector. So I'm sure most of you all are at your homes right now staring at the wall, so hopefully we can provide you with a little information that's valuable going forward. We've all gotten a lot of mimes and videos and jokes, and one of my favorites is a lady standing outside her house in a robe, basically yelling at a person running down the street and asking them, "Why are you running? Is someone chasing you? Why are you running?" And she shakes her head and says, "Geez, it's 7 o'clock in the morning." And then it pans to her all of a sudden sipping on her wine. So, I wonder if energy is the one running right now, whether we're being chased or we're trying to prepare for an upturn. But hopefully we can give you some valuable nuggets today. We're going to cover pipes, ATMs, converts, shelf registration. Those are some of the topics we'll be covering. But wanted to let you all know, you may have seen the announcement. We just completed as financial advisor a pipe for U.S. Well Service. It was announced after the close yesterday. For $21 million, which will go to help prepay a term loan's interest, push that out a couple of years, so interest-free holiday, amortization-free holiday, and also push the maturity out to 2025. So a very prudent action in this world of liability management. I think the markets received it well. It really prepares them from a cost basis to perform, hopefully, when the market turns. We sent you a slideshow today, a slide deck today. It's got some of our qualifications in there, but I would like to just touch on what we saw before the coronavirus downturn in Saudi and Russia, and then what we're maybe going to see after and parallel it to what happened in 2008, 2009, as well as 2016. But we were already experiencing a pretty tough market for traditional energy. It was 4% of the S&P 500. Obviously, now it's down to 3%. That is a all-time low. And the other thing we were seeing is a big push from the ESG component from investors over toward more renewables, or at least avoiding anything carbon-based. And that made a very tough environment for 2019. As we all know, and it made a tough environment even just coming up until further pressure we've seen recently. And what investors were also focused on if they were going to invest in energy, I think we've all talked about this before, is cash flow generation, return of capital back to the investors, and those companies that had strong balance sheets. So not sure any of that change is coming out. It may be more iterated from that perspective, but we were seeing a lot of liability management going into the coronavirus situation. And, much like U.S. Well Service just did, some others basically pushing out maturities, trying to raise either converts to do that or some sort of equity capital to help mitigate that in a downturn. So when you look at where we are right now, what we wanted to sort of raise is how do you get prepared for coming out of this cycle? And at some point in time, we will. The hardest point right now is line of sight of when that will be. And there are two lines of sight, obviously. One is when do we get back to our lives with the coronavirus situation? The other is, you know, when do we see more normal behavior out of OPEC, namely Saudi Arabia and Russia? And obviously, everybody's seen the announcement or the Twitter feed from President Trump today. Oil's getting a bid by 25% with hopefully some cuts, but we'll see. But we need both to happen. But what happens when we come back out? Well, if we look back at 2016, that was a really, really big year for energy equity issuance. We raised $44 billion in the sector just in the U.S. alone, high water mark in the last 20 years. A lot of that capital was placed right after oil was at hit 26 bucks in February. Most went to E&Ps, some went to others. The first case was to bolster balance sheets and then also for CapEx for the E&Ps to execute. It happened really, really fast. And so, you know, those companies that were prepared to issue benefited. Those that maybe took a while to get their act together may not have gotten terms, may not have gotten a deal done. I reference that time for a couple reasons. One, unclear whether all those investors will be there this time to help support it. That was several years ago. The ESG components come out. But that is the last time the energy group outperformed the S&P. So it will be interesting to see if some investors at least put ESG on the side in place of seeking attractive returns. So from us, there's one big, strong message that we should all consider, and that's sort of preparing the house for readiness, if you will. And from our perspective, that means, you know, making sure you're shelf eligible. You may be a WKSI, a well-known seasoned issuer, and you may have an automatic shelf. But if you don't, you ought to consider, and should be a tool in the box to get one in place now. It's not going to signal anything to the market other than, you know, from a board perspective and from a CFO and CEO perspective that you're doing a prudent thing. And it really prepares you to move quickly with some of the tools that we're going to talk about going forward. And some folks are trading, may go into baby shelf land. That's when you're below $75 million in public float and you're restricted to 33%. Of that float and issuance, but even having a shelf for that, I think is beneficial because you know we see in market rebound you can get outside of that baby shelf back into normal shelf land. So being prepared is key. So I think we saw in the last recovery in 2016 the primary financing tool were follow-on offerings. A lot were overnight wall cross deals that were confidential by nature. We didn't see a lot of open publicly marketed deals just because people didn't want a lot of exposure to their share price. So I think we may see some other things that make a lot of sense. We may see more pipes. We may see the ATM tool used, and then converts may also help us lead us out of this, if you will. So what I'm going to do right now is turn over to Dave Studinski. I mentioned he is our global head of equity capital markets at Piper Sandler. And Dave walked through kind of the interplays between, confidentially marketed deals and more importantly, pipes and how the pipes helped coming out of the financial crisis over 10 years ago. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, great, Ira. Thanks for the introduction. Thanks, everyone, for your participation today. Look, we've provided an equity financing alternatives grid, which summarizes the most common forms of equity capital formation in the slide deck that had been circulated around. I'm not going to flip page by page here. For those that have it, you can certainly reference the comments against the deck here. But, that equity alternatives grid is really organized under the header of where a prior shelf registration statement, whether that's an S3 or a WKSI, is irrelevant, is required, or in situations where it's not. And as I believe most of you are likely already familiar with traditionally marketed follow-ons, I really wanted to focus my comments today around two alternatives which may be less well known, and that is the confidentially marketed follow-on, sometimes called CMFO, sometimes CMPO for confidentially marketed public offering, and then the PIPE format, you know, each of which, you know, provide effective financing solutions for public companies in circumstances like we're in today, where a traditional marketed deal may not be possible, advisable, or maybe even desirable. So what are CMFOs? I think maybe the succinct way to say it is, you know, CMFOs are similar to traditionally marketed follow-ons in that the documentation is the same, comfort letters, legal opinions, underwriting agreements, et cetera. The prep work is the same leading up to any transaction launch. The target investors are the same. The real difference is in how the marketing is conducted. So for execution purposes, we approach, and we do this out of the Equity Capital Markets Group at Piper Simmons, we approach investors typically over a 1 or 2 day period on a confidential basis. The only non-public information that is shared is the fact that the company is contemplating an offering. So this isn't sign a CDA, provide a lot of non-public information. It's simply the fact that the offering is being contemplated. And we build an order book with very high visibility to demand, size, price, and then and only then announce the deal public with that visibility, typically at 4:01 p.m. Eastern time on the night we intend to flip the transaction or complete the deal. We then at 4:01 follow that up with a public marketing stub piece, which is outside of trading hours, and we price the transaction before trading begins the next morning, thus mitigating any potential share price impact that may occur from the marketing of the offering. If I compare that to a PIPE perhaps, so in contrast to the CMFO, a PIPE is a privately negotiated sale, commonly called a private placement, of a public issuer's equity or equity-linked securities, where the sale is conditioned upon the subsequent resale registration statement being filed with and then declared effective by the SEC. So in sum, the reverse is true on a PIPE, where a company would sell stock first and then file the resale registration statement as mentioned. And oftentimes you would commit to file within 30 days, go effective within 90 or 120 days after the completion of that PIPE transaction. Now, PIPEs are also highly negotiable and can be structured in various ways, really depending on your particular specific objectives, profile, maybe tailoring to an investor's particular investment strategy. So we have a lot of flexibility, whether that's a common stock variety, could be a convertible preferred, could be a convertible note. And each of those are both relevant and available to companies in the market today. As I had mentioned, that subsequent resale registration statement, you know, is the point when once those shares are registered, that the investor has the ability to resell those into the market. So I thought maybe I'd conclude here before I turn it back to Ira, but just maybe highlighting, you know, why companies are completing CMFOs and PIPEs in the marketplace today. I'll tell you the first one is they're doable financings in today's market environment, right? Ira just referenced a deal we closed last night. We have several others that are in flight at various levels here. And it is something that is completable. There are also stealth financings where you can market, as has been mentioned already, confidentially, discreetly, and really give you a free look at the marketplace before you'd have to make any announcement publicly. They're also quick and efficient. So for timing considerations, the prep can be done within a few days. There's rapid execution, oftentimes within 1 or 2 days once we've set out into the marketplace. So the path from start to finish is quick to the extent speed's an important part of any capital raising you may be planning for. Yeah, it also allows an issuer to direct shares into the hands of a targeted group of new or existing investors. So before a single phone call is made into the marketplace, we would partner with you ahead of time, develop a targeted investor list, approach those investors who are already pre-qualified under confidentiality. That pre-work, I will tell you, often leads to a very high hit ratio in terms of who we approach and their interest in the transaction. So this will not be an exercise in trying to blast as wide as we can from a marketing standpoint. That's more the bailiwick of a fully marketed deal. It will be an exercise in targeting work. Maybe last point I'll make, last maybe one or two here. So it does allow for flexibility or some customization that may suit your unique circumstances in terms of the offering format or terms. And then from a dilution standpoint, you know, each of these formats accommodates financings that either might be deemed perhaps too small for a publicly marketed transaction, in some cases too large, where there's just not a lot of conviction, perhaps, of how much capital can be raised and why would you expose yourself to that in the public format. So, Ira, maybe I'd stop there. I guess the last thing I'd say here before I turn it back to you is people often ask, gee, what is this period most like? What's the analogy here? And for me personally, it's like the 08-09 period that we went through. Certainly the structural reasons we're here are different, and I'm not making any light of the current health crisis we're all facing. But from an investor standpoint, we are starting to see the green shoots. A lot of the long-only funds, folks who have staying power, are now beginning to come to us on reverse inquiry basis and otherwise looking for opportunities. And so I think that's encouraging. While the ride may be a bit bumpy here, it is a place where capital formation conversations begin. So, Ira, why don't I turn it back to you then?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. That was good. And we are seeing some reverse inquiries of folks looking to get back in the sector from different layers in the equity cap stack. And we're seeing it more and more every day, which is good. I think we're going to turn it over to Neil Riley and Mike Bassett right now to talk about at-the-market offerings. This is something that energy companies have not necessarily put in place in the past. There are some that have. We think it is a very valuable tool. And at the very least, it basically can help get reverse inquiries from investors, which is a major reason to put it in place, as well as being able to raise capital very quietly. So, Neil, I'm going to turn it over to you and Mike.
Great. Thanks, Ira, and afternoon, everyone. So as Ira had mentioned, we see the ATM as an increasingly useful tool in the capital markets. It's also the fastest growing product that we've seen in the capital markets over the last few years. So just as an example, this product has grown in particular threefold over the last decade. It's up nearly 30% year on year across all sectors with 350 ATMs filed. And while it's been lagging in the energy vertical, We do expect that to change course just as we see the acceleration of this product across other sectors. So let's talk a little bit about what it is. So this is the issuance of common stock into the market utilizing a shelf registration statement. And again, this is one of the key themes for this discussion. Many of these vehicles are delivered by way of having a shelf in place and having that optionality. Instead of aggregating demand via a traditional marketed transaction or a traditional marketing effort, like we do in a follow-on, we trade the stock on your behalf during market hours. We do so discreetly, selling and moving those shares either in block form or just using volume to trade out of a position like we would for any other mutual fund or hedge fund seller, being cognizant of, price impact, being ahead of the volume-weighted average price and the like. The sale of these shares are not disclosable until the filing of your Q. So a key point there is the discretion. And speaking of which, you have the flexibility pursuant to the agreement and agency selling agreement that we have in place with you to decide when and at what price you are selling the product, you are selling stock. So, just the comment that Ira picked up on relative to investors. So we continue to see interest and intrigue across the street growing for this product. A number of top mutual fund desks and hedge fund desks are asking Piper for our list of filed ATMs. So top fund complexes like Fidelity, T. Rowe, Cap Group, Point72, Millennium will look to bid meaningful blocks. And in some cases and examples in other sectors, we've been able to raise as much as 10% of a company's market cap in just a few intraday blocks. So it has the ability to be very meaningful and certainly one that is well received by both issuer and investor alike as a result of that optionality. So how do these funds become aware that the ATMs are in place? You know, it is a public filing, so you file it via a prospectus supplement. So there's a public announcement when you put the program in place. You know, it's also, you know, subsequent to that public filing, it's typically referenced in investor interactions that you all may have through conferences, through specific non-deal roadshows and the like. And also our trading desk takes the approach of distributing out our list of ATMs every couple of weeks so that we are constantly in front of these investors, making them aware that we have a line in the water and there's potential action here for near-term blocks. So maybe just a couple additional points here relative to the benefits as well as considerations. So, you know, why would someone, you know, put this in place? You know, pricing in this environment is particularly attractive because you are by definition selling stock in line with the market, perhaps just a very slight discount, you know, pennies of a discount relative to where the stock is currently trading. And remember that, you know, coming out of this recovery period, as we hope to do in the near term, the expectation from investors is that you're going to see much wider discounts than you ordinarily would and certainly in a more normalized environment. So, you know, the ability to price at market is certainly an attractive feature of this product. It's also confidential. So while you're selling blocks or distributing shares into the marketplace, you're not obligated to report the amount of stock that you've sold until such time as you file your Q. There are at times interpretations for larger blocks where that would be deemed a material event, in which case you would announce the takedown off of the ATM after the market closes later that evening. So in the example that I had used, whereby we had sold upwards of 10% of a company's market cap, that was disclosed after the trade had already occurred. You do have sole discretion over these sales. And finally, the time commitment, I would argue, is much more limited than a traditional follow-on offering. So, you know, what are the considerations? I would say, look, you are dependent upon block interest being surfaced, and the trading volume is a meaningful element for you to have the ability to monetize. So, you know, we typically have practical limitations by the amount that you have the ability to sell. So 10% of a daily trading volume limit is a good guideline on the amount of what you can sell. You are, by definition, spreading out your ability to sell these shares over a broader period of time, so there is broader market risk as opposed to launching a transaction on a Monday and pricing it, you know, on a Tuesday night or Wednesday night. This is typically more spread out, but again, at your option. And to Dave's point earlier, relative to the documentation, this is very similar to a traditional follow-on. It's a prospectus supplement off the shelf, a distribution agreement in lieu of the underwriting agreement, as well as opinions and comfort letter also required. So just to wrap up in summary, you know, this is, you know, because of its flexibility and optionality, we believe you'll continue to see this particular product grow to the point that, you know, nearly every issuer that determines to file a shelf will also include an ATM just as an extension of that option. So, you know, we hope that you'll reach out to us with questions and follow up here and feel that we can give you the right advice, just given we're a top five agent on the street in this product. So with that, I'd perhaps turn it over to Mike Bassett and or have Steve pick up the conversation on the convertible side.
Yeah, you know what we'll do? This is Ira again. Just for the sake of time, we've got about 5-6 minutes left. Why don't we pop over to Steve? Steve Studnicki, head of convertibles, is going to cover convertibles. We've shown a lot of companies convertibles. Used to be a very prevalent product in energy. It leads the way out of these situations, and Steve, I'll just hand it over to you to streamline.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ira. And you saved the best for last in the convert market. And I'll be quick here. Just I know we're running up against the time. But converts are really something that are an in-between equity and straight debt. Kind of a hybrid product is the way to think about it, where if you're a company that feels like the cost of debt is just too onerous, or covenants are too heavy, and at the same time, you know, maybe you're feeling that your equity is just too undervalued, or you know, maybe the market's not there for you to raise enough equity capital, you can come to the convert market, which tends to be very accommodating to companies who are in a position where they just can't find the right fit between straight debt or common stock. And some of the big benefits to converts are, number one, you don't have to have a shelf in place. So comparing that to a traditional follow-on offering or an ATM, you know, a convert, you could issue just 144A to qualified institutional buyers, and there's no price impact for doing that. And then secondly, when you compare it to straight debt, there's usually a few hundred basis points improvement in terms of coupon. So just generically, if you're doing straight debt at 10%, then you're probably doing a convert at 5%, 4%, something like that. And converts tend to come unsecured as well. So that's a big benefit on an interest cost perspective relative to either leveraged loans or high-yield bonds. And then when you look at it from the equity perspective, you're going to be selling stock at a premium. So you know, as opposed to an equity raise where you might have to sell shares at a discount or something like that, in a convertible bond offering, you would be selling stock at a premium to wherever the spot share price is trading. And so that can send a very bullish signal to investors as well. And when I think back to the 2015-16 oil and gas period, when there was a pretty big flurry of issuance in the convert market, a lot of it was correlated to high yield spreads. And when high yield spreads widened out and the cost of that debt became candidly a little bit egregious for folks, there was a big flurry of convert issuance to really buy down that coupon, improve your cash flows, and for you guys with big CapEx spends, you know, that can be very meaningful in terms of cost savings. So I would think about converts from an energy perspective very similarly to just cost savings on coupon. I think that's been the biggest driver historically. And then again, in this market, you were seeing a lot of interest from funds both on the fixed income, equity, and traditional convert side who are segregating cash to buy convertible bonds because it's often perceived as a safer way to play equities in volatile markets. And when I think back to sort of how this period looks versus the 2008-2009 period, which Dave Studinski referenced in the beginning, there's a lot of similarities just from a market reaction perspective. And when you think back to 2008-2009, converts were very popular from an investor perspective because they were viewed as less volatile ways to play stocks, which is what we're seeing today from the same kind of mindset. So, you know, when I think of energy, converts are really customizable solutions where we can work with you around tailoring an outcome that really meets your needs. And it's definitely something that I would think about as a hybrid between debt and equity. And it can even be structured to the extent you're looking for this. It can be structured to receive equity credit on the balance sheet. And that's probably a more broad discussion that we would want to have with you. But if you're looking for that type of treatment, whether it's from a rating agency or just internally to comply with other covenants that you might have in your debt stack, we can structure a convert to receive equity credit. So I'll just stop there and flip it back to Ira. I'm assuming we have about a minute or so remaining for closing remarks, but appreciate the time today on the convert front, and feel free to reach out direct if you have any follow-up questions.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, and thanks, Dave, Neil, Mike. We really appreciate you all being on the call today. I mean, I hope we've provided a good view of what to look at to be ready for when these markets come back, and then get a sense for what investors are asking us about today. I mean, we're very, very active in the markets. We've got a lot of dialogue going on right now. Everything's pretty fluid, but these products are ones that I think will be utilized in full fashion here coming forward. We didn't have any questions today just because we respect your time, tried to keep this to 30 minutes. But if you do have questions, please feel free to reach out to any of us, and there's a list of us and the entire energy group on the last page of the deck that we sent out. So we'll be continuing hosting calls similar to today's in different disciplines. If you have any topics you want to see addressed, please reach out to us or Victoria Beard, who coordinates these things. And once again, I'm supposed to remind you that This can't be referenced in any articles and should be considered off the record. Look, everybody stay safe out there. There's nobody more than Simmons rooting for the energy industry right now. It's an awesome industry. Everybody's running hard, and we'll see our way through this, and we want to be helpful in doing so. Thanks a bunch.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.